Garrick. It's your little friends.
Bye, man.
What are you guys doing here? Oh, we did? Yes! Yes!
Off to the movies we shall go, where we learn everything that we know. Cause the movies teach us what our parents don't have time to say. And this movie's gonna make our lives complete. Cause Terrence and Philip are sweet.
Super sweet.
Thank God we live in the quiet little redneck podunk white trash.
Come on!
You!
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome to another episode of the Film Room, and once more we're going with one of the episodes that I had in mind when we were starting the show, and it's certainly something that we've kicked around for a while of discussing on a cast, and we're finally getting to do it.
We're going to do it. We're going to discuss going to the movies.
Going to the movies. This is, so you're not going to hear a lot of clips of movies or anything like that here. But we are going to discuss some of our favorite stories about going to films and the whole experience. And this is one that I've wanted to do for a long time because it's something that everybody goes through. I mean, it's something that everybody does, and it's something that's kind of ritualistic. And also, because I do like kind of giving some stuff behind the scenes, we've been battering around some ideas for some kind of negative casts. But guys, we're coming off of The Neighbors Chronicles. And watching The Neighbors, or whatever we want to call it. I don't know.
Episode 4, which was the worst.
Yeah,
so
we just recorded that a few minutes ago. And we're ready to go into something we love and to have some fun. And this is kind of going to be, if you listen to our video store cast, this is an echo of that. This is kind of the same situation. And, except that this isn't a eulogy.
The movies are alive and well. I think they will be for a very long time.
If you want to put this in terms of time and place, we're recording this on Wednesday of the week that Avengers 2 comes out.
Yes.
So this weekend, theaters across the nation are going to be jam-packed.
Oh, yes. Unfortunately, like, we had planned to kind of echo the first Avengers, where we both took a trip to Springfield and, you know, went to an arcade and saw Avengers at the premiere. We were going to do something like that. I was going to go down to Little Rock, and we're going to have ourselves an Avengers party. Unfortunately, my illness that's been going on since January kind of prevented that, because I have no money.
Yeah.
So,
we'll do it again.
Yeah, we're going to make that up, I think, with Civil War.
Yeah, that's what we're looking at, Civil War. But, you know, as I said, this is a moment in which we're going to be just, you know, we're thinking about this. And I actually went to the movies last night. Amanda and I had kind of gotten out of the habit in the last year or so just because we've been so busy. But we kind of got back, but we're getting back into that slowly but surely. We're going to hit our second movie in a week on Friday, which obviously is Avengers. We went to see an Insurgent last night, and this isn't the place for a review of that, though I did like it. I did like it. But let's just, I think the best way to start is to start at the beginning. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes. Our first movie-going experiences. I have to say, the very first movie I remember going to is Home Alone, the first Home Alone.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is a nice family film to have that with. I mean, I just remember, like, I wasn't at the time alien to the concept of going to movies, but I was just like, where we gonna see, and they wouldn't tell me for some reason.
Hmm.
Until we got there. But it was fun.
That was nice. See, I'm torn between my first one that I think I saw in theaters and my first one that I know I saw in theaters. I mean, I know I saw a lot of movies in theaters. It was not an alien or weird thing to me. The first one that I think I saw was Lady and the Tramp. I have very vague, distant memories of it. So distant to the point that they're really more, you know, impressions. But I've done my research. I can confirm that there was a re-release in 1986. So I would have been tiny. I would have been 3 at the time. And here's the important thing. I know for a fact that my mother absolutely loves that movie and would have gone to see it. So,
yeah.
So, you know, my mother wanted that on DVD for her 50th birthday, so I have little reason to believe that that wasn't the case.
I kind of have to revise. Home Alone was the first movie I remember going to see, but I don't think it was the first movie I saw. The first movie I think I saw was Little Mermaid.
Ooh, good one.
Because my parents have a distinct, like, I've heard this story millions of times. I don't remember it at all. But my parents have a story of me coming out of the theater saying, "The frogs go tra-la-la."
Oh, I know that I saw Snow White in theaters. I know that nice. One. That one I'm firm on. In its 1987 release. And that one I'm firm on. And, you know, early Disney is a pretty good start. I think that's classic Disney. I believe my sister's first movie was Pinocchio. I think if I've done the math correctly, and I remember right, it was Pinocchio. So, you know, good choices, good choices.
I think when my mom was pregnant with me, she saw 101 Dalmatians.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, re-release of that.
Yeah, there would have been a re-release at the time, yeah.
Yeah, which is a really good choice for that, because I love that movie.
That is a wonderful film. I know I saw it in the 91 re-release. I definitely saw that. Do you have any particular memories of, like, your first theater that you went to?
Not specifically. We moved around a lot. At the time, like, it wasn't until we, like, moved to Missouri that we really kind of settled in one area. And, you know, the towns we lived in Indiana were small, you know, as stated before. So they didn't really have theaters, so we'd have to go out of town for one. But the first concrete, like, local theater was Harrisonville, Missouri. It's not a bad theater, like, in of itself, but Harrisonville audiences are the fucking worst. I think I've talked about that before here before. Just experiences going to see Return of the King, somebody, like, straight up answering a phone call during the climax. Like, "Hey, I'm in the middle of Return of the King." Like, "Yeah, we know." And, you know, some lady talking during Kill Bill Volume 2, like, right behind me, trying to shush her, and she just, like, wouldn't take the hint. It's like, it was the worst. But, anyway, that's my first, like, concrete theater.
I actually, just for the heck of it, looked that up on Cinematour. It looked like a nice theater. Yeah.
Yeah, the Cinema 6.
Yes. I found it, definitely. Guys, we're going to include a lot of Cinematour links on this, and what the hell, we will even include a few shots taken by me.
Oh, yeah. That was good work, by the way.
Because I am going to be bringing up that theater anyway. Yeah, it looked like a nice theater. You know, and also, hold your tongue on Kill Bill. I definitely will be getting to that story later. I've probably already told it on this cast, but if not, I'm going to make sure I get it in.
Before we leave the Harrisonville Cinema 6, there is one more thing I want to say about it.
Please do.
Not to say that I don't have fond memories of going to that theater, because I do. Like, I saw a lot of good movies, I saw a lot of bad movies there. I had some good experiences going there. I looked forward to going there.
Mm-hmm.
But especially with my friend Brandon. Hi, Brandon, if you're listening to this. A lot of the bad ones I saw with him. But my sister worked in there for a time, which was cool. She got to go to movies for free. Supposedly, one of the theaters was haunted.
Cool.
Yeah, like, they would... The story was that, like, the back... Like, the one to the back and to either the left or right... When employees were cleaning, they'd swear they saw, like, a man sitting... Or somebody sitting, like, in the front row, and then when they'd look again, he'd be gone.
That brings to mind, there's a wonderful story by the writer Joe Hill, 20th Century Ghost, about a haunted movie theater. And it's about all these people who are coming back together after the theater is it's about to close, and they're all coming back together and discussing their stories of the ghost. And the owner is sitting there, and he's listening to these people talk, and he takes note of every single person around him. that's talking about the ghost, every single one of them, it turns out, went in to do something with movies with their lives. I don't think I have ever read a better story on the love of cinema in my entire life.
Nice.
I highly recommend it. Hill is an amazing author.
It's one of his...
short stories.
Short stories, all right. I was going to say, he writes comics, too.
He writes comics, novels, and short stories.
Yeah.
And he's very prolific on the short stories, too. So,
nice.
Yeah. There's a comment that I could make there about being prolific on short stories and novels, but I'm not going to. He deserves to.
Yeah.
He deserves not to have that brought up.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah.
But let's talk about, you know, my first theater, I didn't move around as much as you did until I was 10, and then I only moved once. But I have two theaters that I think of when I think of my first theater. The first theater that I think of is the Tomball Cinema 6, and there is a cinema tour link that I'm going to send to it, which remarkably was taken in 2009. Before they did admittedly go in, do a full remodel, gutted it, and rebuilt it. But in 2009, it actually looked so identical to my own memories that it gave me chills.
Nice. I love that feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they didn't change it one bit, really. But that was the theater that we used to go to the most as kids because it was, A, it was close, B, it was cheap. I mean, that was really the big thing was my parents... and myself are, you know, you care about the dollar. And it was a nice enough theater. You know, I saw Snow White there. I probably saw Lady and the Tramp there. I know that I saw DuckTales the movie was a big one that I saw there. Muppet Christmas Carol, Shipwrecked, The Lion King. I know I saw The Lion King there. That's one that I'm always grateful that I saw there. So, yeah, so good movies. Good movies were seen there. Also, a bunch of bad ones. I could list off, say... You know, let's see, there was Rookie of the Year, there was,
You didn't like Rookie of the Year?
I don't like it now. If we ever get to the nostalgia cast, that's one that's going to come up. I don't exactly like D2 or Blank Check anymore either. But
Right.
That was the big theater that I went to, was that. That was the big one. There was also the theater in Willowbrook Mall in Houston, which I can find no photos of. That's the only one that I've never been able to find any, not even a trace of photos of. And that was an important theater to me. I didn't go there all that often, but when I did go, it seemed to feel important. I saw Aladdin there.
Nice.
I saw Richie Rich there, just to tie back to the last cast. But that was my big theater. And then there was one other theater that I really, there was the AMC Willowbrook 8, where I saw Oliver and Company, and... I'm going to hold that story for a moment, but there was also a couple of dollar theaters in Houston, one of which is still operating and looks exactly identical today. It has not changed one bit, and it's still open.
Nice. Good.
Like, every 6 months I check to see if it's still open. It is. So those were my childhood theaters.
Now that I think of it, there is one, like, when we lived in Beersburg... that we go to. I don't know the name of it.
I'll bet I can find it. I need to have Cinema Tour just open.
Yeah. Look near Beersburg, Indiana. I know it's not in the town, but Beersburg is right on the border between Illinois and Indiana. But anyway, there's a theater I remember. I saw Indy in the Cupboard there.
Mm.
Yeah. I saw Casper there. I was going to see a Goofy movie there. I forgot why that didn't work out. It was at an awkward time or something like that.
That's a shame. That's a good one.
Oh, it is. It still holds up. I bought it recently in the Blockbuster, like, when they were selling off all their films. Tie back into that. But I think I saw Babe there.
Ooh!
Which was my favorite movie for the longest time. That's one that my dad... I drugged my dad to, because I wanted to see it so bad. His initial attitude was of that. He didn't let me know at the time, of course. It looks so stupid. I don't really want to see it, but I'll see it for you. And he ended up being floored by it. Yeah, we both still love that movie. Yeah, we saw the Flintstones there.
Mm-hmm.
Make of that what you will.
Yeah.
That's one I enjoyed at the time. I haven't revisited it. I'm kind of afraid to.
I revisited it just 6 months after I saw it and was like, oh. Oh, this is not good.
I just remember at the time, people were like like, buzzing about, oh, you know how they made Dino? It's the same way they made the Jurassic Park dinosaurs.
No.
Now it's like, well, duh, computers.
Yeah.
But at the time, that was such a big deal.
That's not a movie that exactly, I don't know, there's not much to say about it.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so there is one theater there, I don't know the name of it, that we did frequent, that was able to see all those amazing movies.
Yeah. Most of the theaters that I went to as a child, I mean, are now all gone. From the time that I moved to Little Rock until today, not a single, I'm trying to think, I believe this is correct. Yeah, not a single theater in Little Rock in the from 20 years ago is still operating.
Wow.
There have been a couple that have been rebuilt on the same spot. But I don't count those. Those are new theaters, in my opinion. Both of the theaters in Conway have been bulldozed. One has been replaced. The other has not been. In Houston, there's a little bit of a higher hit count just because it's a bigger city. But the areas around those theaters may not exactly be the most shining. You know what? I just thought of another one that I do want to bring up. The theater in Spring, Texas, where I went to see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That one's actually still operating. And it's actually still a top-notch theater. I think they just installed lounge seats.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Which is something that, I'm getting ahead of myself, but I do want to touch on that. But those are the theaters that I remember. And as I said, I'm going to provide links to as many of these as I can.
I think that theater that I mentioned, I think I saw at least the last two Ninja Turtles films there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I know that I saw the second Ninja Turtles at the AMC Willowbrook, and boy, I'm fine with not. I didn't see the third one until many years later.
Yeah.
I just didn't. I do want to ask, though, and this is going to be kind of a tangent on where we're talking about our childhood theaters. Oh, I did think of one other theater that's still operating from my childhood. We always used to go see movies with my grandparents in Hot Springs. And that theater is not only still open, but I have a friend who works there now. So those are, you know, as I said, those are the theaters from my childhood. But I do want to ask this question. Do you remember what the first movie was that made you go, this is something special?
That's a good question. I know that the movie that sparked me like getting into movies as far as a profession, I still don't know whether that was a mistake or not, but that's okay. Like, just, you know, movies are hard to make money at when you don't live in LA.
Exactly.
And even then it's hard, but it was Fellowship of the Ring. I got, like, as far as that goes, I got in pretty late, but, like, when I learned how force perspective worked, I was just like, you can do that?
It's the simplest camera trick, but it makes that movie look that much better.
Yeah, and I just thought that was so cool. And it's like, I want to be part of this. Like, I wanted to be a cinematographer. Then I learned how hard cinematography was until I got a taste of editing, and then I wanted to be an editor, and I still do.
It has to be conceded, by the way, that we reference cinematography in Lord of the Rings with a heavy heart at this moment.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He just passed away.
Yeah, indeed. R.I.P. Andrew Lesney, truly one of the greats. You know, I guess I bring this up in terms of, like, the movie that first sparked me, because mine was many, many, many years earlier, with Oliver and Company. And it's funny, because looking back on it now, it is the most mediocre Disney movie possible. It is...
Mm-hmm.
This is not a great film. It's very 80s. It's very of its moment. It's nothing special. But But that experience of going to the movies in 1988 sparked me. That did something to me. That told me that there was something out there that I needed to pay attention to.
I think for me, it was either Babe.
Good choice.
Yeah. Or All Dogs Go to Heaven. That was like the first really, you know, gut punch emotional film.
Given that there's about 6 years difference on the films, I'm probably going to wager it was All Dogs more than likely. That would probably be the one that I'd go with.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one that I loved, but it's like, it's such an emotional gut punch at the end.
Mm-hmm. And it don't get easier when you know the reality of the movie.
Right. Oh, God. Yeah.
Ugh, horrible. But yeah, that's how I feel about the whole movie going experience for me. As I said, that was the moment where it was like the switch was flipped on and couldn't be flipped off and can't be flipped off. I'm now roughly 27 years removed from that experience, and I still feel that intensely. The experience of going to the movies, you know, I try not to bring up my other issues and my other work that I do, the high functioning autism stuff that I do. But I am a high-functioning autistic, and this does speak to my desires and my loves and my interests. And I don't know. I just, this, as I said, it was just, going to the movies is my thing. It's my unique experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, as I said, in that moment, I still can remember so much about that moment. I can remember the lights. I can remember just being dazzled by everything and just being blown away by it all. And it just, it did something to me. And the funny thing about that is, okay, I said that seeing Oliver and Company in November of 1988 was the moment that flipped on the switch for me. Let's all rewind back to the beginning of the cast, one of our earliest casts. And remember that we discussed Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which came out in the summer of 1988.
Yeah.
I'd like to remind people that I saw that one in theaters too. Why I don't count that one as the one to flip the switch, I don't really know. But then again, it's probably more that something was catalyzed. Something had been growing in me that year. Going to the movies in 1988 catalyzed something for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that may have just been it. It may have just been building, and that's the moment where it was like, ding, this is it.
Right.
This is it. This is my life. So much love for those stuff, because as I said, I did see Who Framed Roger Rabbit in that era, and I may have been a little too young to appreciate it. That may have just been what it came down to.
Right.
I certainly appreciate it more as an adult.
Like, I think there was a certain age for me where I just really started, like, movies were all popcorn until a certain moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like I go rewatch my favorite movies, and it would be a whole different experience because, you know, I was paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what age that was, but there was a certain age where that happened.
I think there are two separate ages that you go through as a film buff that are vital to becoming a true, like, switched on fan.
Right.
There's the first phase that you go through is the phase of, I went to see this movie, and all of a sudden I started paying attention, and I was there for the movie, not for the experience.
Right.
And some people never get out of that phase.
Hmm.
Some people don't. Actually, I take it back. There's three phases that I went through, and I'll get to that third later. The second phase that you go through is when you start to realize that not every movie is good.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
Boy, I think everybody remembers the moment where they started to realize that not every movie they went to see was good.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, I think I told you mine. I remember that specifically. It was a video experience, thankfully. Okay, at this point, I think George of the Jungle had already come out.
Mm-hmm. Which is wonderful.
Loved that. I don't remember if I saw that in theater.
I saw it twice in theaters.
Yeah. I might have seen it in theater. But, so yeah, loved that. And I was a huge fan of Rocky and Bullwinkle. And just all those, you know, all the G Ward, you know, cartoons.
Those are great.
George of the Jungle was separate from that, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Dudley Do-Right was a part of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
He was.
That was Steve Martin, right?
No, it was Brendan. It was Brendan Fraser again.
That's right. It fucking was. Yeah. So Brendan Fraser, you know, from kind of the same sort of material. You know, I was expecting good things from Dudley Do-Right, the movie, and at the end of it, just left me empty. It was like one of the most confusing feelings in the world, because it's like movies can be bad.
It's frustrating when you hit that point where you're just like. Mine was a theatrical. I mean, I definitely saw a few movies on video that I didn't like. That was nothing too weird to me. But that was because, to me, the home video experience has always been a separate media, essentially.
Hmm.
I mean, only in the last few years, due to having to do it, have I started including my video films, movies watched at home. And that's largely due to the VOD phenomenon on my Best of the Year list, because they're still eligible. And, you know, in fact, Amanda and I watched a movie last week on video, The Babadook. which was amazing
on
video. But I definitely had that on video where, okay, I would watch a movie. It wasn't so hot. BFFD, Big Fat Furry Deal, you know? What is there to say? But I remember the movie that was like the turn for me where it was like, ugh, this might not be so good. And it was A Kid in King Arthur's Court.
That one I did see in theater.
I almost feel like, given some of the things I'm saying on this cast, I feel like I owe Thomas Ian Nicholas a letter of apology. Because I'm sure destroying his films. I love the American Pie trilogy. I love the American Pie trilogy. I'll say that. And I haven't seen the fourth one.
That was the same director?
No, the same actor. He's in those two. I haven't seen American Reunion. I've heard it's quite good, though. So, not hating on him, but, those movies. The funny thing about A Kid in King Arthur's Court is the cast in it. Because, okay, he's in it. But there's a beta couple in the movie. The girl he's in love with, her sister, and her boyfriend who's like an apprentice or something. The sister is played by an actress who, just by sheer coincidence, was in the film that I saw last night. Countless Oscar nominee Kate Winslet. That was the first thing I ever saw her in.
That's right. I forgot she was in that.
That is not a good early credit. Heavenly Creatures was roughly the same time, though, so let's just point that out.
Christopher Lloyd was in it.
No, he wasn't in that one.
He wasn't?
No.
Oh, who played the wizard?
I don't remember, but it wasn't Christopher Lloyd, thankfully. Lloyd was falling, but he wasn't falling that fast. What was interesting was the boyfriend that she was so in love with was none other than James Goddamn Bond. Daniel Craig, I kid you not. Guys, go back and watch this. These are not early credits, I'm sure, either, are exactly talking a lot about. But it is kind of funny to go back and to be like, wow, you guys have no idea how much better it's going to get for you than this. I mean, because it's going to get so much better. But getting back to this film, I watched this movie in a theater, and I felt kind of deadened by it, frankly. It was just, I don't know, there was something about it that didn't tick right. My theory is that it was probably really a direct-to-video movie that Disney acquired on the cheap.
Right.
And it probably shouldn't have played theaters. It wasn't ready. So,
yeah.
That was one that I remember. I just remember that one was like the moment where it was like the switch was flipped. It was like, there's something not right here.
Yeah.
Frustrating experience. You know, and it was one that I didn't really know how to verbalize until a few years later. But not a good movie.
Yeah.
Not a good movie.
Actor by the name of Ron Moody was Merlin.
Oh, yeah, from Oliver.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I guess they had a decent cast on it. They just didn't have a script. Kind of lacking in that script there.
The one thing I remember from that movie, I just love the, when he's like, they're like, choose your mode of combat. It's like, I choose combat rock. And he puts a Walkman, like, two tiny little Walkman earbuds in these, like, cones, these metal cones, and all of a sudden it's fucking loud.
That was stupid.
It's like, yeah.
That was
so dumb.
That was a stupid movie. Incidentally, the next night, I remember I went to see Babe.
Ah, nice.
And I have the same thoughts you have on it. That's a great movie that 20 years on holds up great.
I think you've urged me to see the sequel.
The sequel's unique. It bears noting that the sequel comes from the director of the Mad Max films. Yeah. So.
That's funny. It wasn't the same director as the first?
No, but Miller was a heavy producer on the first one, so. Yeah.
And didn't he write both of them also?
I think he might. I don't know. I don't have the IMDb credits at hand, but I know he had a hand in the project. He might have. I don't know. But, you know, as I said, those were some early, like, just experiences for me. Another experience that I've already talked about at length on this cast was, of course, going to see Space Jam. And just walking out of that being like, that was not what I wanted.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, there's always the pinnacle of Batman and Robin. That one was so bad that I was actually depressed for about 24 hours.
And, yeah, he did write Pig in the City.
Yes.
He also wrote Happy Feet, but not getting into that.
Nope. People are diverse.
Yes. He also wrote the latest Mad Max.
He directed it, too.
He directed it? Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's...
Yeah, you're right. Damn.
He's done all of them. At one time, Mel Gibson was going to do this about 10 years ago, and things just got in the way, and, well, then Gibson got in the way. For the record, I am perfectly fine with Tom Hardy stepping in. Anyway, you go through those experiences, though, in life, where you realize that, okay, movies aren't that good. I think that all that kind of helped to explain why there were certain movies in the summer of 1997 that I was like, nope, not going to see it. You could not have made me watch Good Burger to save my life.
That's one I actually enjoyed. I think 97 was still in the era for me that I just, you know, I liked a lot of stuff.
This is where that minor age difference between you and I does get highlighted.
Yeah, this is true. Like, now, it's not so much, but age gap doesn't really matter after you get out of high school. But before that, it matters a lot.
No, I mean, I'm married to a woman 5 years younger than me.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Good Burger I liked. You know, any of the Nickelodeon movies that came out at the time. I think that was like the second one, like late 90s. I was still kind of in that phase. I thought I liked Space Jam. I had the soundtrack, which actually wasn't too terrible.
No.
It's only upon revisit that I just, that some of these films are like, ah, shit.
Again, we will be covering nostalgia, hopefully by the end of 2015. This is one we really do want to go back in and look at. But I don't know. I do want to talk about the theaters. You know, you said that you started to have stable theaters when y'all moved to Missouri. What do you remember that theater being like?
I haven't been to that theater in a while. Like, I've kind of driven by and seen it and seen that it was still there.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Like, we knew the people that owned it. They went to our church. Yeah, I just remember it being, like, a nice, small, you know, snug, cozy little theater.
Do you remember the location of it?
Yeah, it was in a mall. It was, like, a tiny little mall called Milwaukee Mall. And that's still there. I remember, going out of town to a few AMCs. Mm-hmm. Like, I know there's one, I don't remember what city it was in, but in 1997... Titanic was released in the summer, right?
No, it was released in the winter, notoriously.
That's right, it was.
It was going to be a summer release, and James Cameron couldn't make the date.
I think it was in theaters for a while, though.
Oh, God, it played in Conway from December until June. It played from, I can tell you the exact dates, it played from December 17th, 1997, to June 19th, 1998.
Damn.
That is a full 7 months.
That's also the time when, you know, the rental gap was larger, much larger.
Yeah, it didn't hit video until September.
Yeah, almost a full year. And they were prepping for that.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember, like, a Blockbuster ad when it finally came out. You know, they show a couple of employees lining the wall with Titanic VHSs. And you hear a rumbling and then a bunch of screaming girls, and then one of them takes out a stick of Banaka.
Nice.
But the point of me bringing that up is that I have a distinct memory of us going out of town to see Titanic, mostly because our air conditioning was broken at the time.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So this had to have been late in the run.
Yeah.
Either spring or early summer. But I remember us hearing a lot about it and a lot of the hype, and it's like, you know, let's all go see Titanic. And you know, we saw it and it was very entertaining. Yeah. And we're like, yeah, that wasn't bad.
No, it wasn't.
I don't know if the hype was all that, but it wasn't bad.
It's good.
Yeah. I just remember, you know, big fans on the ceiling going during the movie. And it's like, ah,
yeah,
air conditioning.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I saw it not too late into the run, like maybe a couple of weeks in. It was the longest movie that I'd ever seen in a theater until that point. And it's not now, but I've seen it three times in theaters. Two of those times had to do with came during the re-release in 2012. I probably would never have seen it again in theaters, but you know,
right.
As I said, there's a third phase of going to the movies, and that's when it's not so much your choice as it is other people's choices.
Right.
And oh, do I have stories about that going awry. oh, God.
Oh, I do, too.
Before I get any further, I guess I do want to address the two theaters that I went to in Conway regularly, because they were two very different theaters. They were actually not that far apart, like maybe 2 miles apart as the crow flies, but they were in, but people referred to them in A World of Difference. The good theater was the one in town at town center where my friend Lauren worked, and in the summer of 2002 was a very great help to me watching more movies than I might have otherwise watched. Thank you.
Nice.
Thanks from afar, Lauren. Thanks. We have covered Lauren before, sadly.
Oh yeah, she's been on the cast in a roundabout way.
Yeah,
yeah.
So the Town Center Theater was the nicer theater. It had digital sound. Starting in about 99, it had decent seats, decent picture. That's where I went to see movies like, well, just about everything. But that was a good theater, and that was a theater built in 85. It was built in 1985. But then there was the other theater. I'm going to refer to it as the Gutter Theater. That's not the actual epithet people in Conway used for it. The actual epithet I don't want to repeat.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my.
Yeah. People hated this theater. I don't hate it. It was in, I don't know, it's hard to say a poorer part of town when, as I said, it was 2 miles distance.
Right.
It was in an older shopping center, is the thing. Let me list off the reasons that I hated this theater. The picture routinely went out. The sound would never work. And I'm not even going to keep singing all this. You just, let's see. Picture was bad. Sound was bad. Seats were enough to cause back spasms. When I went to see AI, oh, I got horrible, horrible back cramps while watching it. And that's not a short movie.
Ew.
That is a 2 hour and 25 minute movie. That's a long movie.
It is.
It's a great movie, but it's a long one. So, you know, this theater was terrible. The projection was just, as I said, it was atrocious. When I went to see The Fellowship of the Ring on opening day, I want you to keep this in mind. We're talking one of the great blockbusters of that, of the decade. One of the great films of the decade. And the digital sound went out about the time of the Council at Rivendell, and it went down to just standard sound throughout the rest,
aka one of the most talky parts of the film.
Mm-hmm. And it went down to, I mean, the sound was still like there, but it like went down to standard sound. Like you could hear it go from the crystal clear digital sound to the standard issue sound.
Oh fuck yeah! I forgot what theater it was. It might have been the Cinema 6. I don't know. But sometimes they had an issue with the sound kind of going back and forth between those two.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was so annoying and so distracting.
That's just...
Yeah, you just wait for somebody to, you know, go up and say, hey, the sound's cutting in and out.
Mm-hmm.
I think it did that for Kill Bill Volume 1.
Yeah.
In fact, it was the Cinema 6.
Mm-hmm.
Damn.
Well, those theaters tend to be like that. Mall theaters.
Yeah.
I suppose we should pause. This would be a good chance to talk briefly about mall theaters.
Yeah, yeah.
The mall theater actually is experiencing a bit of a resurgence as malls are kind of revamping and revitalizing. And increasingly, you're seeing multiplexes added to shopping malls as a good way to once again drive things up. The new mall multiplex is typically overpriced as can be. You know, but it's in all other ways a standard multiplex. There's nothing really great about it. But the old mall theaters were fascinating. I remember the mall theaters in Houston, and there was one in Little Rock. There was one in Park Plaza that I only went in once. But these theaters tended to be the equivalent of shoeboxes.
Mm-hmm.
You'll look at how they're laid out. The Dollar Theater that I used to go to the most in Houston was in something resembling a shopping mall. And it was a classic mall theater. It was a 6-screen theater. And the way that these theaters were set up were, they were long boxes, basically. Completely rectangular, no square screen. There was no curvature to the screen at all. There was nothing to make these special theaters. They were just, you took your seat, you stared up. The picture was bad, the sound was bad. Mall theaters were the... You have nostalgia for them because they were great at their time, but they were never good theaters.
Yeah.
They were always excuses to drop kids off theaters.
Right.
They weren't places to go on romantic dates, really. I don't know. I remember those theaters, and I didn't go to a lot of them, but I went to a few. There is one in Little Rock now at McCain Mall, and there's one down in Pine Bluff, I know. And that's the only theater in town there, so.
Don't stop in Pine Bluff.
On the other hand, that mall is a dead mall, so it's kind of interesting to see that. This is not the cast to discuss dead malls, but oh, are they fascinating. But, I mean, the thing about those theaters is they used to always just be very, they were very poorly lit. I noticed that was like a hallmark of the mall cinema. Was they were usually not all that well lit.
I do to briefly, like, speaking of Cinema 6, this was kind of going, like, into middle school, like, the year before high school.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, yeah, my parents were pretty, I'm not going to say lax, because they weren't. But, you know, they let us watch R-rated movies mm-hmm. when, you know, they thought we could handle it. Like, I saw Monty Python and the Holy Grail at a pretty early age.
That one's really hard, though, to call a very hard R movie.
Yeah.
I don't know that it would take a tremendous edit to make it a PG-13.
No, it really wouldn't. But, you know, it's definitely not a kid's film.
No, it's not.
Let's see. Yeah, I saw Life of Brian pretty early. Yeah, I saw...
That one's much less a kid's film.
Yeah, I think the stipulation was that, you know, if it was, like, an R-rated film, my parents would make sure to watch it with us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's the important distinction. Like, I remember we saw Man on the Moon as a family. And that was R.
Yeah, it was a very firmly. Hard R.
Yeah.
Very good film, too.
Enjoyed that. But anyway, so my sister and her friends were going to see Scary Movie. That's one that I wanted to see. I didn't know at the time what it would lead to. I didn't know that, you know, I mean, Scary Movie, I haven't seen it in a while, but I don't know. When I finally did get to see it, I thought it was pretty funny.
Yes, it's decent. It's one of the better ones.
Yeah. I mean, but God, would that lead to the downfall, though. But anyway, that was the time for that.
No, but we are going to get there. Hold that thought.
Yes, yes. So that's one, like, it was the first time my parents, like, I remember my parents saying, like, absolutely no, you cannot go see that. I think it was just because they were not going to be with me. I was going to be with my sister and her friends. And I think I remember Dad giving me a talk, like, trying to let me down easy on not being able to see it. Like, now, this film is going to be kind of perverted, right? And I'm like, yeah, it looks like it could be. It's like, we keep our perversions at home.
Yeah, kind of perverted, you know, one hell of a disgusting death, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he was using perverted in the sense that it was, like, twisted.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, it was pretty perverted in that way, too. But anyway, I saw Pokemon the Movie 2000 instead.
You may have won. You may have won.
Yeah.
You know, I never really ran into that of my parents overruling something, mostly because if there was something like that I wanted to see, I just waited for video.
Right.
And even then, it wasn't a case of them ever really wanting to overrule me. My tastes were such that those weren't really the kinds of films that I was racing to see. Really wanted to see Good Will Hunting in theaters, but I ultimately held off on that until video, and I've spoken a healthy amount on my thoughts on that film before. Suffice it to say, I'm glad I did finally watch it on video. You know, I mean, I don't know. My mother was much more strict on my TV viewing, and I don't really blame her there. Sometimes I wish she'd been stricter.
Really?
Yeah, I would have liked to have not seen as much of Married with Children as I did.
Oh, shit. Yeah.
That's one that has not held up.
My parents were pretty strict on... not really that strict on the TV viewing. I think the only clear memory I remember them not letting me watch is In Living Color, which I've actually watched since, and it's actually pretty hilarious.
Oh God, I used to watch that with my mom and brother all the time. Oh no, that was family viewing at the Shin House. That was total family viewing at the Shin House. Yes, I'm proud to say.
Oh, I could see that.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, you've met my mother. No, I loved In Living Color. I haven't watched it in years. I suspect it probably holds up pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
You know, getting back to the theatrical experience, I mean, again, I'm holding off on telling you about the present day one for a bit, but, you know, I guess I do want to briefly take a moment to pay homage to a couple of other theaters before I move on to some more specific stuff. As I said, those were the two theaters that I went to the most, were the Conway one. In Little Rock, we went to the Market Street a lot, which was the Bargain Theater. And it was, I didn't realize it until it became an art house, but it was pretty horrific. The sound was bad. The picture was bad. It was bad. It was a bad theater. It was a crummy, crummy, crummy little theater. And then it became an art house, and it became a really overpriced, crummy theater that insulted me. So I wasn't a fan of that one. However, they've now that property has now, like, the owner of that has now taken the art house. The Market Street has now closed and become the Riverdale 10, which is just down the street from my house. That one I like quite a bit more. I like the Riverdale 10. I've got a lot of good things to say about it. Yeah, they installed digital sound and picture, so believe me, it's a lot better now. But there was another theater that my dad used to take us to all the time, and that was the the first Breckenridge Village. That was the one that was really close to his apartment. And so the first Breckenridge Village was a lovely theater. I'll get into the second Breckenridge Village in a little bit. But anyway, those were the theaters. And then I remember, and then of course, when I went off to college, now as I move forward, I start to talk about places that are common in my life today. Actually, this is a good place to ask this. Do you remember the first time that you went to what we would now consider a modern state-of-the-art stadium seating multiplex?
Like an AMC?
Yeah, like a standard, like stadium seating, I guess, would be the barometer that I'm going to use.
If I remember right, I think my first experience with that was that Titanic viewing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the first time I remember it distinctly. It was at AMC. And yeah, I think that was my first exposure to that.
That would make sense. That was about the time that it was starting to become in vogue. As I said, I remember my first stadium seating experience, was I went with my dad to see Prince of Egypt at the second Breckenridge.
Nice.
Which, boy, if you're going to see what a modern theater looks like today, that was the film to test it on. Stunning, stunning animation.
It looks so pretty.
Stunning animation, intense sound, a feast for the eyes, and the first Breckenridge Village, or the second Breckenridge Village, still stands. That one opened in 1998. It is still open, and I have been there as recently as under 24 hours ago. That's where I went last night. That's actually where Amanda and I usually go.
Nice.
They have 3D, they have stadium seating, they have digital sound, and now they have recliner seats there.
Nice. Those are nice.
Mm-hmm.
The last theater I went to that had that was, I don't think it was an AMC, I think it was a Dickinson.
Mm.
It was just last year I took my cousin to the very last showing in the area of How to Train Your Dragon 2.
Ooh, good film to test a theater on.
Oh, yeah. And it's, it was the AMC 30. Mm. It was the AMC 30 in Olathe. That's the only theater I know of in the area that has the recliners, and wow, they're nice.
They are nice. I will be sitting in one on Friday.
Nice.
Because, as I said, that's our standard theater. That's the one that we like the most. The other theater in the area that I go to a lot is The Rave, which is a theater that you've been to.
I have been to that. We saw Captain America there.
Yeah, one time when you swung through town, that we went to see that there. That is a great theater. Great sound, great picture. Very comfortable. It's just a nice theater.
Yeah.
I will probably be back there before too long. I should mention, in Conway, there is a new theater built on the ashes of the old one. And Amanda and I have gone to see a healthy amount of movies there. And they're a good theater. They're a good theater. I like that theater. We've gone to see some good stuff there. Amanda, I just wanted to take a moment to give a shout out to. Always my favorite person to watch a movie with. She's fun to watch movies with. She responds. She reacts.
Good.
She gives her all when she watches. So I dug watching that with her. So that's the experience that I've had watching that with her. There was another theater, actually, weirdly enough, that was a mix of stadium and standard seating, and that was the Pickwood 11 in Russellville, where I went to college. They had a mix of stadium and standard seating.
Is that the only theater in Russellville?
That is, yes.
I've probably been to it then.
Yes, you have. Beyond any doubt, you've been.
I saw Inception there.
Nice. Yeah, that's a good little theater. I've got a lot of love for the Pickwood. I will note, there is not a single film screen in Little Rock left. Those do not exist.
There is exactly one in my town. And by my town, I mean like Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the Alamo. And it's only because it's the Alamo.
Mm-hmm. They're the only ones that can get away with being that anymore. And I'm sure that they're a hybrid of digital and film, too.
Speaking of Christopher Nolan films, I went to see Interstellar there, and it was a beautiful film print.
I'm sure. Did they have it at a 70mm?
This one was 35.
Still.
It's still good. And if you go out and buy the Interstellar Blu-ray, it actually comes with a frame of film.
I saw that they're doing that. I think that's really cool. I guess we have to briefly talk about the issue of digital versus film.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I can't be a hipster. I'm digital.
Yeah. I miss film just in the nostalgia of it. The only time I can say it's ever gone awry, like as far as, you know, being in a theater and having the film kind of mess up, was my dad and I went to see Doug's first movie.
Mm.
Speaking of, well, actually, that was a Nickelodeon film. That would have been the Disney era.
Yeah, it would have been Disney era. Started as Nickelodeon, yeah. But yeah, that was Disney.
Yeah. I haven't seen the film since, so I can't say whether it holds up. But yeah, the film projector broke down in the middle of the movie. It's like, great.
I've had that happen twice. Actually, three times. Once was when I went to see 21, and it died before the last 5 minutes of the movie. And so someone actually gave us a refund, and someone told us the last 5 minutes of it. And I was really tempted to walk up to the guy and go, you know, I really don't give a shit how this movie ends. Because I didn't give a shit how it started.
Right.
21 is one of those movies. It is the equivalent of steam. You can tell it's there. You can see it. You can sense it. But you don't really notice that it's there, and you won't remember it later.
Right.
It won't leave any traces in your mind. It was just sort of there.
Hmm.
So he gave us passes to that. When I went to see Horrible Bosses, the projector stopped midway through, but they were actually nice enough to get it going again, and we finished the movie. And then probably the all-time epic for me was when I went to see Anger Management. And during the trailer for X2, the print burned. And they couldn't get... And they said, we can give you tickets for another showtime, but it won't air in this one. My mom and I just said, okay, give us tickets for later. And we never wound up seeing Anger Management. To this day, I have never seen Anger Management. We used the passes instead to see Holes.
Nice. That's probably... You probably got the better deal there.
Oh, I don't even think probably. I definitely got the better deal. Holes is awesome.
Yeah.
Holes is wonderful.
I mean, I did see Anger Management in theaters. And I thought, for an Adam Sandler movie, it was pretty good. Now, I stress, for an Adam Sandler movie... Take that for what it's worth.
Yeah.
Which is not much.
Nope.
I think probably the thing there that hooked me in was it actually had a plot that made sense.
Those don't happen very often, but...
Yeah.
I don't know. I just... The theaters that I go to, I mean... I don't know. What is it about... That whole burning experience is hilarious. And by the way, when I got... Oh, there was one other time they screwed up. They showed the wrong movie. Yeah, they showed the wrong movie. They started to show A Perfect Honeymoon, or whatever that movie was called, when I was going to see District 9, and it was at midnight. So they gave us all passes for that. And although they did wind up showing District 9. So I wound up seeing District 9 and Inglourious Basterds on the same ticket.
Nice.
That was cool.
I mean, that's nothing like I remember... And this wasn't too terribly long ago. Do you remember when they accidentally started showing The Hills Have Eyes 2 instead of The Last Mimsy? Like in a theater and I forgot where.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They started showing The Hills Have Eyes 2, which ends with a very graphic alien birthing scene.
Ugh, yeah, that's lovely. That's lovely. Good call. I've known theater employees. I don't want to trash talk them, but...
No.
A healthy amount of them are high schoolers who do not give a shit. So
let me ask you this. With we're in the fully digital age as far as theaters go.
Yeah.
A local theater, the Tivoli, had to have a Kickstarter campaign to keep going because they didn't have enough money to convert to full digital. Like, they had to... they had one theater converted to digital, and they had two... It's an art house theater. They did make their goal. They're still going, which
good.
Is great.
Good, good, good.
It's a good little theater. We've had a lot of... I had a lot of college classes there. They were nice enough to let us use the theater for that.
Yeah, but you have a huge arts community there. I'm not surprised.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah, my question is, now that we have, like, everything's completely digital, do you think that that is reduced, that problem?
No, I think it's much worse. Oh, God, I think it's much, much worse.
Really? Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I think it's way worse. I think it's way easier. It's much, much, much easier to have that happen. It is so much easier things like the wrong movie to be shown. You hear that much more often now, especially because a lot of them are on, you know, it's in computer systems that don't necessarily work very well.
True.
I mean, yeah, it's much easier, and it stinks. But it does give to some funny moments, and as I said, although it's funny, the scenario that I was talking about with the District 9, that was on a film screen. But here's the thing. We talk about embarrassing incidents of parents and kids, you know, parents seeing some horrifying stuff. God, doesn't this seem like a great time to talk about one of the great parts of the theatrical experience, when parents bring kids to movies they should not see.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay, the most recent one I can think of that is, I went to see Coraline.
Mm-hmm.
And now that is a borderline family movie. It's a family movie for mature families.
I'd say 10 and up.
10 and up, yeah.
Mature 8, 10 and up.
There was one other family there. It was a family of a man, a woman, and a baby.
Oh, God.
And, yeah, there were interruptions.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, one of the parents had to take the kid out of the theater, and it's like, oh, God, why did you bring your baby to a theater? I mean, I understand, like, you know, my sister and brother-in-law have kids, and, you know, it's hard for them to, you know, get out and see a movie on their own. You know, and they have us for babysitter, so I understand, you know, that's hard to get a babysitter, but damn it, get one!
Get one. Just get one.
Yeah.
This isn't hard. This annoys me. This annoys me when people do that. You know, I suspect I've told at least one of these stories before, but the late lamented Dollar Theater, which I've talked about the death of, and again, we'll include a link to some of the photos, which I think we've included before, but we'll do it again. I remember when I went to see another movie that night, and I saw a bunch of kids going into the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah, there's a good call. It was 9:45 at night. There's a good call. I went to see The 40-Year-Old Virgin there. A mother brought her kids in halfway through the movie. Yeah. And then when I went to see MacGruber, there was a father. And yes, I did see MacGruber in theaters. I have no shame on that one. But there was a father who brought his son in. Now, that is a graphically violent movie. And he took the son out during a sex scene.
Yeah.
You are an idiot.
Yeah.
How hard do I make this? You are an idiot. You are just such an idiot. It blows my mind. So that was my experience watching that there. And of course, the all-time great. I have probably told this story on this cast. I don't care. I'm going to tell it again. It was when I went to see Kill Bill Volume 1 at the Dollar Theater. And by God, it was, I would say, a third children. I would say a third of that theater was children. Kill Bill Volume 1. Guys, if I was to try and tell this story with a to like make it funnier and change the movie to be a more hyperbolically violent movie, I wouldn't do that. It wouldn't be possible. I mean, maybe I could slip in The Passion of the Christ, but but there's complicated reasons behind why parents would take their kids to that one. I'm not saying I agree or disagree with them, but I'm saying that I know that there are reasons. Kill Bill Volume 1, I can't even make up a more violent movie that a parent would potentially take a kid to see. That movie is wall-to-wall graphic, gory, cartoonish violence.
Very.
And I'll eventually cover my thoughts on that one. We'll eventually get to that one through the years. I mean, but come on, it's Kill Bill Volume 1. It's great. But it was there were so many kids in that theater.
Oh, Jesus.
That's what I got for waiting till the movie was at the Dollar Theater to go see it. Incidentally, when I went to see Volume 2 later that day, boy, that was awesome. There was only one kid in the theater. And he was much older, and I got the impression he probably was mature enough to enjoy it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so no, I see that all the time. Parents taking their kids to movies they just should not take. That's one of the fun things about the theater-going experience, because the theater owners don't care.
Right. See, this is why it bugs me. Like, this is a whole other cast.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to touch on it. This is why it bugs me that theaters don't allow NC-17, and therefore not a lot of movies get rated NC-17, is because, you know, the fundamental basis of an R rating is that, yeah, kids can go see it if they're with a parent. NC-17, they're not allowed to take their kid in.
And there are some movies that should be NC-17.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to, like, you don't have to change anything, really, you know, to include the NC-17 rating. Some movies should just have that.
A good rule of thumb is Quentin Tarantino directing it? Yeah, put that on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't allow your kid to see that.
Yeah, don't. Your kids should not be seeing Tarantino films until they are 17. Kind of thing, I don't think I've never seen an NC-17 movie in the theaters. Never.
No.
Because I haven't had the opportunity. I guess I've had the opportunity. I haven't had the desire to see the films that got rated that.
Yeah, I have to think. Because the Tivoli is one of those that, of course, it's an art house theater, so they'll show NC-17, they'll show unrated.
Mm-hmm.
They showed Lust Caution.
Yes, Ang Lee.
And he did accept the NC-17 for that film.
He accepted it because he was Ang Lee. He could get away with it.
Right. So I guess I've had the option, I just haven't.
That's kind of, I guess, where I stand, is I've had the option. I just, because the art house in Little Rock does show them. But you know, seriously, there are some films that should be NC-17. The Passion of the Christ absolutely should have been NC-17.
Yes.
These are not judgments on the film's quality. In fact, all the films that I'm listing that I think should be them are high quality films. Films that made my best of the year list, without a question. Yes, including that one, Come At Me, World. But, you know, it irritates me. It irritates me that theaters don't do a better job of policing kids. That's one reason that Amanda and I don't go to the rave very often, is because they don't do a good job of keeping shitheads out, to be blunt.
It's a good theater. It's a great theater.
It's a great theater, but we don't go often enough because they don't police it well enough. You know, there is that. Let's talk, though, about the opposite experience. What happens when you watch a movie and it's just you?
On one hand, you're kind of being robbed of a little bit of the theater experience, mm-hmm. because, you know, watching it with other people is fun. On the other hand, it's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Just recently, it was just me and my friend Ben for Interstellar.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
And it was at the Alamo, so we could... Just because it was just the two of us and there was no way to complain about it, we could talk to each other during the film.
I've been in a lot of just me and my friends situations. Last week for Cinderella, Amanda and I had the theater to ourselves, and it was great.
Nice.
Yeah. I've had that a lot at the Breckenridge. I've had that at the late Dollar Theater. I had that happen a lot. There was another theater in Little Rock that I would occasionally go to before the Riverdale became the art house. I would go there occasionally. I saw Milk Solo. I saw Milk, Ponyo, Step Brothers, Zach and Miri Make a Porno. I got to see those alone. The comedies I wish I hadn't seen alone. There is something really deadening about watching a comedy and it's just you.
Yeah.
It's not as much fun.
The second time I saw the Simpsons movie, I started out, there's another guy in the theater, and then he left halfway through, I have no idea why, and he just never came back. So I count that as, you know, I was there alone.
I have to bring up, that brings up a question in my mind that I have to ask you. Have you ever seen a movie where people walked out in mass? Like, just a bunch of people just were like, that's it, we are not sitting through this. We want our money back.
Not in mass, but I do remember going to see the musical version of The Producers,
mm-hmm.
and a couple of elderly couples walked out. Because, you know, I'm sure it wasn't what they thought it was going to be.
I've made it clear I wish I had joined them.
Yeah, it's pretty filthy.
Yeah.
Like, there are some pretty filthy jokes in there.
Yeah. There is one movie where I have seen people get up and bolt en masse. And I just wanted to take a moment to list some of the films that I have seen in theaters. I have seen a lot of Darren Aronofsky films in theaters, including The Fountain. And people stayed still, mostly because not a lot of people walked in the first place. The Idiots. I have seen people. I have seen The Passion of the Christ. I have seen, you know, Quentin Tarantino's films actually inspire just the opposite of walkouts. Usually when I see his films in theaters, the audiences are with it and with it all the way. The movie that inspired the biggest level of walkouts, I kid you not, was Jet Li's Hero.
Really?
And I can tell you why. I went to see it in Russellville, Arkansas.
I think I know why.
You know exactly why. I went to see it in Russellville, Arkansas, and about the minute that someone started speaking, it became clear, oh, this is a foreign film in a foreign language with subtitles. And people stormed the exits. People ran out of that theater. They did not want to sit there and watch a subtitled film.
I hate that.
I do too. But the kicker of it is, those of us that stayed got to see one of the most gorgeous looking... The fight sequences in that movie are epic. The story is great.
To be clear, I don't hate when movies are subtitled. I love subtitles. I hate that people walked out of it because of the subtitles.
Oh, I think people understand by now where we stand on this. A great movie. Yeah, yeah. I love Hero is amazing. It's just a phenomenal film, and I love it. And it's,
I have yet to see it.
It's beautiful. Every frame of that movie is a painting. Talking about cinematography, the great Christopher Doyle, it's probably his crowning achievement as a cinematographer. This is a tremendous film. But as I said, The Idiots walked out because I didn't want to hear I don't even want to think about it.
Now that you mention it, I don't remember if there was a mass walkout or not. But I do remember a loud grumbling when people discovered that Pan's Labyrinth was subtitled.
See, that one I went to see in a packed house, and it did, and nobody really complained, although one idiot talked on the phone during it for a period.
I hate that. That's a whole thing we'll have to address here.
Yes. Oh, like, we have so much more yet to say. Y'all, this is going to be a long one. I know this is going to be a long cast. I'm prepared for that. But as I said, that was my experience. Let's talk about the moments. As I said, as you noted, we've never walked out of movies. That's not how you and I roll.
Right.
There have been times that I've been tempted. What are your times that you were tempted?
There is only one time. Like, there are movies that I have sat there and just, like, in the middle, I kind of decided that I didn't like it. But at the same time, I didn't walk out. Mostly because I was with a friend. But those are kind of situations where you kind of grin and bear it. But, you know, the only time I can remember where I was alone, you know, going to see a movie alone and was so on the edge of walking out was Scary Movie 4. Such a shit movie. There's only one time I laughed at any joke in the movie, and that was, it was kind of a throwaway moment.
Yeah. That's usually how those laughs come in those movies.
I have
two movies that I really was just right on the verge of. I would have been out of there if I didn't have my rule. And in one case, I would have actually been out of there if anybody else I'd been with had gone. The number one example that I always think of, because I came right to the brink of doing it, was, and I'm going to make a lot of people angry with what I'm about to say. I hate to do this. I hate to use a female-directed film as an example. But guys, I came right to the verge of walking out of Something's Gotta Give, and I stand by that. Years later, as I think about that movie, I stand by that. That was one of those movies that afterwards... do you ever see a movie that's so bad that you have to sit back and wonder, well, was it right for me? And that's how I felt with this movie, because I sat there, and the jokes did not land for me. The jokes were your generic, men are pigs jokes.
Right.
And I just found it tiresome. I wasn't laughing at the movie. It was loud. It was irritating. Jack Nicholson was bored during it. Diane Keaton was wonderful, and that kind of made me annoyed more at the movie.
Yeah.
She was wonderful. She looked great, and it was an appealing film. If they had taken her performance and lifted it on rails and given it to a better script, it would have been great. I love Keaton in a lot of stuff. Oh my God, this was unendurable. And I almost, like, here's what happened. I got up to try and find a better seat in theater. And for a split second, I was like, you know, I could just go. I wouldn't get my money back, but I could go and I could say that this was the one. I stuck it out anyway. And I know a lot of people who really love that movie. I'm sorry, I hate it. The years have not softened me. But it's one of those things that said, I was just sitting there going, was I the wrong age group for it? And then I remembered that As Good As It Gets and About Schmidt are two movies that As Good As It Gets is one of my favorite movies, period. And I saw that when I was 14. That wasn't the case. Was it because I was I was a male? Well, I had just seen Love Actually a few weeks earlier. Sleepless in Seattle was a movie that I grew up on and watched passionately. I loved the films of Nora Ephron. I love romantic comedies. This should have been a hit for me. It wasn't. And it had a great trailer. Never forget. It had a great trailer. Trailers lie. And by the way, we're not going to cover the trailers part of the theatrical experience, except to say I always go.
Because we kind of already have.
We have. I always go. I enjoy them. I always try to see them. There was one other movie that I do have to address, though, and this is actually going to be a lead-in for a question for you, so how about that?
Okay.
The longest movie that I have ever seen in theaters was Gods and Generals. I am so sorry that that is what has to be my answer for the longest ever, because at the intermission, me and a group of friends actively considered walking out. Because at the intermission, we still had a full 2 hours ahead of us of this crap. My friend that organized the trip was like, come on, this could be like a Civil War, you know, big epic. It wasn't. There's next to no battle scenes in the entire film. It's mostly a lot of talk. It's one of the worst performances I've ever seen the great Stephen Lang give. He's miserable in the film. He just lets his beard talk for him. He's miserable in it. It's bad. It's funny, which is funny, because I've actually listened to like an 8-hour audiobook that Lang read. That's how much I like the guy's work, that I will listen to an 8-hour audiobook by him. This was hell to watch. I hate this movie. So we really actively considered walking out and going to another movie, and we probably could have gotten away with it. I wish we had. That is one of the, I would say, that's one of the five worst movies I've ever seen in a theater. Maybe the worst, because it didn't have any business being in a theater. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's my answer to that. That brings me to my question. What's the longest movie you've ever seen in a theater?
The longest as in actual time, or just like the longest to sit through?
Longest to sit through.
Hmm. Well, I had to think about that. Jeez. I don't know.
I will say, if you take Gods and Generals off the table, probably Return of the King.
Yeah, that was a long one. I will say, for that one, semi-related, I do not get the criticism of... I mean, I get it, but...
It's still stupid.
I think people are looking at it the wrong way. Yeah, the multiple ending thing.
It's stupid. It's stupid. I actually shouted Encore when I left the theater. I have that on my record. Nice. I did. I shouted Encore. And I meant it, damn it. I meant it.
Yeah, but what people don't understand is it's not just the ending for one movie. It's the ending for three.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for an 11-hour epic.
I don't know. They're stupid. it's a deeply, deeply satisfying ending. I've got no complaints about it.
I'm not sure if I specifically remember a movie where I thought, this isn't going to end, is it? But...
Oh, I have those all the time.
Most recently, Wolf of Wall Street was pretty long.
Yeah, Wolf of Wall Street was 3 hours easily. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I like that movie. I really do.
I still haven't seen it. I hate that, but...
Yeah, yeah. It's on Netflix.
I know.
It's long, though, yeah. But I do like that movie. I don't think it's Scorsese's best, but, you know, it's still Scorsese.
Yeah.
But that's one I watched at the theater going, man, this is pretty long. And there's a point where you think, yeah, this should end. Like, I don't know too much about how actual events unfolded, but I think he probably got it, you know, as accurate. Yeah. In fact, he confirms that he got it as accurate as the book that it's based off of, which is written by the guy who the movie's about.
So probably not all that accurate.
And, you know, the movie sets that up brilliantly because they set him up as an unreliable narrator. So I thought that was pretty brilliant. But anyway, yeah, that's one movie, at least in recent memory, where I was going, shouldn't this have ended by now?
On the other hand, there are also extremely short movies. There have been a number of films that I've seen that have, excluding the IMAX documentaries, you know, which were always under an hour, probably the shortest theatrical film that I've ever seen would be the recent Winnie the Pooh only ran 63 minutes. It's quite good, though, so that's one that I actually still really recommend. It's very good. It's just very short. But I don't know. You know, that brings up something I do want to talk about, which is I want to express a little bit of anger that I feel towards these theaters that are trying to sell these pseudo IMAX screens.
Yeah.
I'm calling out the RPX Extreme Experience stuff. I'm calling out the Raves, you know, they're extreme. I'm calling out the Cinemark XD, all of it. I'm calling out all of these companies, and especially the one that I'm the angriest at is IMAX for daring to allow their brand to go on these pseudo screens that are not IMAX level.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what all the AMCs installed it, including this, my local one that's like 10 minutes from my house, the AMC 20. Yeah, they installed one of those, and it's like, I have been to like an authentic IMAX screen. I saw Fantasia 2000 on it, and ooh, that thing is fucking huge. Fun little story, I actually got to see myself on that screen.
Cool!
Because my mom at the time worked for UMB Bank, and they were sponsoring like a little thing for IMAX, where they're going to shoot a thing called Kansas City Presents.
Aww.
Like a little 5-minute little montage thing that would play at the beginning of every IMAX screen for the next 10 years. This was like in 98.
Yeah.
So we went to Kauffman Stadium, home of the Royals. Go Royals, they're doing really well right now.
Yes, I've seen.
That's as deep into sports as I go. So yeah, we got to go to Kauffman Stadium and for a film shoot. Like, we got to be the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because they were in the middle of a remodel at that point, so the seats were going to change color. So they told us to cover up our seats as much as possible.
That's great.
But that was fun.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, and they had a little story planned out for it. Like, they had the score up on the scoreboard. Like, they were pretty detailed with it. And what surprised me, too, when I finally saw it, we were only on the screen for, like, 2 seconds.
Eh, still cool.
But it was still pretty fucking awesome, yes.
I found a lot about, you know, as I love classic true IMAX, but here are my issues with the quote-unquote IMAX that we call today. First of all, the screens are nowhere near IMAX size. Secondly, a lot of it is an illusion due to how they build the screens. What they really do is they take out a few rows of seats.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. And they build it closer to the screen. So that creates a bit of an illusion. It is a bigger screen, but it's not that much bigger. It's like a third bigger. But that brings me to my thing that I really hate. Movies that play on the quote-unquote IMAX screen usually do not fill the IMAX screen because they're not edited to fit, you know? They're not framed.
They're not formatted for it.
They're not formatted. So what you wind up with is huge black bars on the screen.
Yeah. And even then, and I have to kind of call out Christopher Nolan as one of the perpetrators of this, you know, people have movies that are only partially shot in IMAX.
And it's distracting.
Yeah. And you can, that's especially apparent on the, when you see it on video, it's like, oh, all of a sudden, there are no more black bars on the screen. Like, okay.
I noticed that with the Dark Knight, because I did see the Dark Knight in IMAX. And it looks great, but guys, shoot all or shoot none is what I say. But what we have that passes for IMAX, I never go to the IMAX here. I rarely go to the giant rave screen. I'll usually go if maybe there's a set of circumstances that force it, but I don't usually go. I'm seeing a standard 2D screening of Avengers in a couple of days. And that's another thing. Let's briefly just hit on the state of 3D, because we have to discuss that.
Oh, yeah.
It's not doing as well as it did 2 years ago.
Yeah?
It's not. I rarely see a movie in 3D nowadays.
I do whenever I can, except for when I don't really... when I see a movie that's in 3D, but I don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, for big action films, I'll see it in 3D. And, for 3D re-releases, like, you know, Jurassic Park.
Where they actually took the time to make it a 3D movie.
Yes. You know, I saw Guardians in 3D. I think that was the last 3D film I've seen.
I think that was for me, too. Now, in the case of Guardians, they did a really good job on the 3D remaster. And it actually did look like it was in 3D. It actually really looked great in 3D. I've got no qualms with Guardians in 3D. But James Gunn actually oversaw the 3D conversion. He actually worked with them on it. He wanted it to be a 3D movie. And he worked with them on the post-conversion. And he did a great job. Otherwise, it usually doesn't. I'm not going to be seeing Avengers because Joss Whedon does not shoot for 3D. He doesn't care. And I've heard that the conversion is terrible.
Yeah, I was going to consider seeing that in 3D, but now that you say that, nah.
But, I mean, I think that the reason that 3D is suffering also is because animated movies, which have been the big drawer for them, have been having a hard time. Frozen aside, and Frozen, Big Hero 6, and the Lego movie aside, DreamWorks, which used to be the major driver of a lot of 3D animation, is having a terrible time. They've been absolutely struggling at the box office, and that's going to happen. So, I don't know. 3D isn't dead, but it's not something that I go to choose as my first choice.
Yeah. I don't think that it's going to... You know, I think theaters and Hollywood are too invested in it at this point to drop 3D. It's been... I think we have to mention that this year is the 10-year anniversary for that initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Disney started it with the release of Chicken Little. They personally funded... around, I forget, it wasn't very many. It was like around 100 theaters around the U.S. to be converted to 3D because of their film. And I actually got to go to one of those theaters.
I think that there's some hope for the medium yet, but I think it's going to take more filmmakers playing with it. It's going to take more... I know Ang Lee is doing a serious drama in 3D, and he's doing it in 120 frames per second. Now, I have never seen a high frame rate movie, so I'm not even talking about that. Although I do think that for a movie that's supposed to be a realistic drama, doing an HFR 3D movie might be really great.
That might work for that. I did see the first Hobbit in high frame rate. Let me tell you, it didn't work for that.
No.
It was one of those, it was a nice thought, Peter. But it's really weird to say this, but all the CG looked very realistic. Like, Gollum looked great.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the stuff that was shot on real sets looked incredibly fake.
They hadn't prepared for the change.
Right, exactly.
I don't know. I trust Ang Lee. I'm going to let him do what he can with it. I think he might be the first director to crack it.
Yeah.
You know, as I said, the theater experience is going through those. There is some discussion on lounge seats as to people are pro or con on them. Having sat in them last night, I'm wildly pro. I do not miss the old theater seats. I do not miss them one, you know, and I'm talking about like the old, not even like the current stuff that you'll see in stadium seating today. I'm talking about before that. I don't miss it. Be gone. Be gone, foul beast. Be gone.
No. Those tend to be thin.
Mm-hmm.
And, the, you know, big boy problems, you know, finding a seat that fits you.
Ugh.
You know, a lot of the stadium seating does.
It's great.
Which is great.
I'm pro stadium seating. But this is an irritation. So, you know, the recliner seats, here's the thing. A recliner seat doesn't make me less likely to pay attention to a movie. It makes it more likely.
Yeah, because, yeah, if you're relaxed and you're not focused on your surroundings, then it's easier to focus on the fantasy that's in front of you.
One of the things that we're never going to be able to do a full cast on, because it's just simply too visual, is posters. But,
right.
God, I will look at every single poster in a movie theater when I go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some can be fascinating. And they're there to intrigue you.
The you know, I told you off mic yesterday that there was, that I'll never forget, one of the posters that really grabbed my eye, and we're gonna post a link to this one, is the first teaser poster for Batman Returns, which was just the silhouette of the cowl and the word Returns. And I looked at that, and I wasn't even a Batman fan at that age, but I knew what the movie was, and I was 7, just so that we're clear. And I looked at it and I was like, oh, that looks cool. And I knew immediately what it was. I want to underline that. 7 years old. The poster was pulled from theaters because it was determined to not grab the enough attention.
Bullshit.
In my opinion, this is one of the all-time greatest teaser posters of all time. You know what? I would probably put it as the greatest I've ever seen, because it had that much of an impact on me in terms of grabbing me. And that's not even for a poster for a movie that I like. Oh boy, here come the flames. I don't like Batman Returns. I have serious issues with it. I think it's a good Tim Burton movie and a terrible Batman movie. So I have so many issues with it. But that's neither here nor there. It's a great poster.
I think one of the posters in recent years that has used that tactic for pretty great effect, like nobody complained about it, was Harry Potter 7 Part 2.
Yeah.
It just had the picture of Harry, you know, with the number 7 on his back, and it had, like, Voldemort on it, I think, and all it said was, it all ends.
Well, and that was basically them telling you, hey, we're done. This is it. This is the mic drop of the franchise.
Right.
They promised a lot in that poster. Oh dear God, did they deliver. You know, I don't know. It's funny because we've done so much time about experiences, and I've talked about so many great experiences that I've had, and I really could ramble for hours. I could write a book, probably, on these stories. For the last Harry Potter movie, the rave was, at midnight, it played on every single screen in the theater. They sold out. I think they sold out virtually every seat. And it's a huge theater. It's an 18-screen multiplex. It was wall-to-wall people. It was a caravan atmosphere. People were there. It didn't start until midnight. People were there at like 4 in the afternoon to get good seats.
Yeah.
The theater was all themed Harry Potter stuff. It was just amazing. I mean, they wanted this to be a grand epic event. And on top of everything else, it was for a movie that was to me, is the hallmark, the gold standard of how you end a series. So, yeah, that was a cool experience. But, yeah, I mean, with posters, I like posters that are more than, okay, that was theoretically a floating head poster, but they did something interesting with it. But I get sick of these Photoshopped, for the love of God, can we get rid of the Photoshopped poster and please bring back in some artists? Can we bring back in people to draw them? Can we bring back in some style? I'm getting really sick of this.
The last poster I remember to utilize that, like just like the hand-painted, there's a specific guy that did that.
Probably a Drew Struzan.
Yeah, him. I think the last poster he did was the Aqua Teen Hunger Force movie poster.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think that was Boris Vallejo.
Could have been.
Let me look that up.
Maybe that one wasn't the last one, because I think they also did the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull poster that way.
Mm-hmm.
But I missed that. There aren't enough of those anymore. Those were cool.
Yeah, let's see. I'm looking at this poster right now. I don't know. I don't see an artist's name on. Let me see. I'm going to throw in who I think it is. But you're right. They don't do those enough. There needs to be. I think it's because there is no willingness to have like a sense of mystery anymore.
Yeah.
And yes, I can confirm he did that one. That was a Boris Vallejo.
Well, there you go.
But there's no sense of mystery anymore to posters. There's no sense of intrigue. There's no sense of you look at an image and it grabs you and it makes you go, I don't know what this is.
But I'm intrigued. Yeah.
I've called Disney out over and over again on their Frozen poster, which I still think that Disney absolutely mangled that ad campaign. But, I mean, I want some sense of mystery. I want some sense of awe. I want to look at a poster and be intrigued. They do, I will say, the Batman versus Superman teaser posters are really good. They're really attractive. But we don't have that anymore. And so I kind of hate that as a movie buff that we're losing that art. I don't know. Those are my, and I sure hate teaser posters that are just logos. I will say one movie that had a baffling run of posters was Paddington.
Yeah.
The final theatrical poster that they chose was crap ugly. Compared to, they had some really, the very first teaser poster was really kind of exciting and intriguing. And then they just got worse and worse and got crap ugly. So, yeah. So, that's just something that annoys me. Can you think of any major topics that you want to cover before I throw out what I think is going to be a good closing thought?
There is one.
Yes, do tell.
That I was going to bring up. And we did touch on it a little. But premieres.
Oh, I love the midnight. You're talking about the midnight showing.
Oh, yes.
I love the midnight showing.
Midnight and or nowadays 7 o'clock.
I don't Thursday. I don't like that so much. I don't work hours that allow me to go to those, and I'm married, so I don't get to go to those. I think when it's all said and done, I'm probably gonna have to clock that the last one that I ever saw was The Dark Knight Rises. I think that's probably going to go down in my personal history as the final one.
Yeah.
You know what? I'm cool with that.
Yeah. We, of course, went to see The Avengers Midnight.
Oh, yeah.
That was very thrilling. And you're right. Like, this, I did go to the 7 o'clock on Godzilla when it came out. While that was a fun showing and there were a lot of people and it was a great audience... Midnight, there's something about midnight that's a little more thrilling.
There is.
You're all there after hours, you know. Most people, there should be in bed. But it's just like, you're all there, and you're all there to see something special. But yeah, I saw Watchmen with my friend Jason. Yeah, that was pretty neat. Let's see. I went and saw Scott Pilgrim, of course.
Yeah, I've established how I saw Scott Pilgrim.
We've discussed Scott Pilgrim a lot on this cast. It's a recurring theme.
It is.
But, and so you all know my theater track record with that. I saw it 4 times before it went out. And I saw the 5th time at the Alamo Drafthouse when they re-showed it.
Nice.
With Live Sex Bomb Band.
For me, it would take too long to list. Because I work until midnight, and I used to work until 11:30, so I used to go to a lot of them. I used to go to a lot of them, period, when I was younger. As I said, marriage and my hours shifting just make it so that I don't. So, there's that. But, it's I don't know. I will say this. They also used to have, that triggered something else, they used to do the sneak preview more often. They don't do that now.
Yeah.
They don't do that now for good reason. Bootlegging has kind of killed that.
Yeah. I had a chance to see... the 2009 Star Trek in sneak preview, but a scheduling conflict prevented that for me. One I did end up going to sneak preview on was The Science of Sleep.
Nice.
Michelle Gondry.
Yeah.
And that was great.
That is good. As I said, we're nearing the wrap-up point, so I kind of have to close with this thought. People have been crying the death of cinema for years. I don't see any reason to think that's really going to happen. I do feel like the kinds of movies that are being made are not the, you know, those have changed, but I think that theater itself will always have some form because there's just something magical about it. I prefer watching movies in theaters to video a million times over.
Same. I mean, it's, I just saw Back to the Future with an audience, a film that I've seen, I'd go in the hundreds of times, and it was so magical with an audience. Like, this is the second time I've seen that movie with a theater audience, and it's still great.
I saw that one a couple years ago with an audience, and it is wonderful. I just I don't know. There's something about the theatrical experience that's pure. And I know a lot of people who disagree. And you know, if you're in a position where you're paying $20 for a ticket and you have to pay to park and I will say this, we didn't address snacks during the movies, and let me tell you why. I don't buy snacks. Amanda will. I don't. I've never been a snacker during the movies. I'm not now. I never will be. If she buys some, I'll snack a bit. But that's not what I do. That's not how I roll. So
I do. And it does cost. But on the rare occasion, I'll sneak something in.
But it's one of those things. If you have the ability to have an amazing home theater set up with a huge screen TV and all that, great. But to me, it's harder to focus on a movie at home. Because it's easier to pull out your phone. I just want... there's a purity and a simplicity to the theatrical experience that I just love.
Yeah. If you're watching on a TV, even if you have a nice big screen, unless you're watching in complete dark, which you can only really do at night at home, you're still that tiny field of vision that you're focusing on. You know, the theater is designed so that... You know, it feels your field of vision, and it's dark all around. The sound is surrounding you, and you're just there. You're immersed. And you can't, and there's nothing else to focus on. There's no distractions, unless somebody distracts you.
And that's always how it, that's always the preference.
Yeah. You know, there's something to be said about, again, watching it with an audience and, you know, getting that mass social experience. It's nice.
It is nice. Film is a social medium.
Absolutely.
So those are my thoughts. And
it's also one of those recession-proof things.
It is.
You know, people will always go to see the movies. In fact, it's an escape from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it's an accident that at the bottom of the recession... People sure went a lot. So I could keep going on cinema. We could do another 2 hours on this topic and still not scrape all of it.
We could. That's the long and short of it there.
It is. So, shall we start the wrap-up?
Let's start the wrap-up. Next time on The Film Room, I know, our next times have been kind of getting jumbled of late because, you know, our schedule is so fluid and is... But that's okay. I don't think we've ever done a next time that we, you know, haven't delivered on at some point.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, next time we're going to fulfill a promise that we had a year ago when we had our friend Beck Poppins on. We made a promise that we were going to have her back to watch Sucker Punch. We're going to do that.
We're going to do that.
Yeah, we're going to compare and contrast a little to other better, more feminist films. But, you know, we're going to do that. We're going to look at Zack Snyder's Sucker Punch and writhe.
Yeah.
In pain.
Ugh. This is not going
to
be fun.
So it was important that we got this one.
To cleanse our souls.
Because that one was absolutely going to be next. But we needed something. But anyway, that's next. You can reach us on Twitter at FilmRoomCast. Our individual Twitters are I am at PrimitiveManPRD, Austin is at UntitledUser, a name I still enjoy. Let's see, you can find us on our Facebook, like our page. We've got a lot of likes in the last week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're over the 300 mark now, which is wonderful. I don't know where y'all are coming from, but we love you.
Yep.
You're the greatest.
Interact with us, please.
Please interact with us, yes. We're open to all suggestions. We are... open to guests. We're open to a lot of things.
Yep.
You know, we are a very social podcast. So yes, do. But yeah, facebook.com/thefilmroom, like us there. You can find us on our main blog, the source of the cast at thefilmroom.podbean.com. And that's where we post, you know, all the articles and pictures and stuff that we talk about that we promise we'll post. And I briefly have to say that for our Penguageddon cast, we were going to have, and I did kind of lead this in, but we were going to have an excerpt of some of the script.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what happened there briefly, shall we?
Let's do that. You take it away, because it mostly happened to you.
Yes. A few days before the cast was supposed to come out and we were going to release the script excerpts, the site that it was on crashed completely. It crashed and ate 3 to 4 years worth of my work. Several hundred pages, several incomplete scripts now are never going to be recovered. And they blamed us. But yeah, they were just horrible to us, so...
But yeah, they said that you guys should have backed it up, which is bullshit. Like, what else is the cloud for?
Even though they actually implied that we couldn't, so...
Right. So yeah, like, I remember I inquired about, because I'd forgotten...
Yeah.
What the site was, like, how to spell the site name, and you said, oh, they're down right now, and I'm like, okay. So I just continued on.
They never came back up.
Yeah, and you got an email to that effect.
Mm-hmm. So,
And they gave you a coupon for another site, for half off another site.
Which, by the way, I've then proceeded, I didn't use the coupon, but I proceeded to, use that to finish an, entire draft of the script, so.
Anyway, so that's what happened there. It's some bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's not over for them.
No, I don't think it is.
Good. But anyway, getting back to the wrap-up. Yeah, you can email us at filmroompodcast@gmail.com. Send us suggestions, send us a lot of things. Send us anything. Really. You can find us on our side blog. That's the fringes of what we talk about, and we have some regular pieces there. And, you know, check out the Galatea Week stuff is still there. That's, yeah. We had fun writing those.
We did. And I've been doing a lot of comic writing there because it kind of feeds into the comic book movies. So look for that there.
Yes. I am going to, as promised, get my pieces up on Superman Doomsday and the Wonder Woman animated movies.
Yep.
Hopefully soon. But yeah, that's... thefilmroomlobby.wordpress.com, is that right?
Yes. Speaking of lobbies, let's all go to it. I'm Austin Shin.
I'm Albert Welch Fong.
Later.
See y'all next time.
Remember to keep your shoes on at all times. Don't pull your penis off unless you really need to. And decent exposure is a class to family. Sights and rage.